welcome to the third episode of the Creative Circle podcast. Today we are in the mobile unit, otherwise known as Phil's car, on the way up to see The Hobbit.
Driving conditions?
Yes, very dangerous driving conditions, very poor visibility, fog. Fortunately, the roads are clear for now. They might not be on the way back. So if we don't make it back, this is our last show. Thanks for listening. We have one more show that we recorded before this, episode 4, so there'll still be one more after this if we don't make it. So stay tuned for that. But we are talking about The Hobbit today. This is our previewing discussion of the book and our expectations coming into the film. And after watching the film, we will talk about what we thought of it.
We don't have lawyers, but if we had lawyers, they would specifically tell you, or tell us, to tell you that you should not try to record a podcast while driving in foggy weather. Actually, you should not try to record a podcast while driving at all. And so, don't do this. And if you do, don't sue us when it fails. And Aaron should introduce everybody who's in the car here, actually. Starting with me.
So, just to make sure our remains are identified correctly.
I want out. Let me out.
I'm Aaron. I'll be wearing the headphones if you find me. If this is still recording, at least you'll have some way to reconstruct the crash. We have Mr. Wells. We have Philip here.
Hi. I guess I'm driving.
Yep, thanks for doing that, Phil. Driver and co-host Phil. And today we have a very special guest. We have Stephanie, friend of the show, on our board of directors. We have Stephanie Erlandson joining us today.
Am I supposed to say something here? About how... Okay.
Welcome.
Thanks.
So, Phil, when were you first introduced to The Hobbit?
That's actually a really good question. I'm pretty sure I was first introduced to The Hobbit when my mom would read us bedtime stories before bed, which probably sounds like a really long time ago, but it was more like last week type thing, throughout grade school, because I have younger brother and sister. My mom would read us stories before bed, and we went through the Chronicles of Narnia, and I'm pretty sure we went through The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings at the time as well. So that would have been the first time I got introduced to it.
Okay.
Well, I think I was actually introduced to The Lord of the Rings before The Hobbit. Two of my friends in high school were huge Lord of the Rings fans. They still are. They already went to see the movie, midnight release. But anyways, so probably when I was 14, that's when I first read The Hobbit.
Okay. Yeah, I was in the 8th grade, so I would have been 14 as well. I read The Hobbit as a school assignment. I think we were doing British literature that year, starting with Beowulf and going onward. So Tolkien was one of the people that I read, and I picked up the book and decided it was really interesting and finished it in 2 days, something like that.
Nice.
And then went straight into The Lord of the Rings and got through that in about 3 or 4 weeks, because I was in the 8th grade and didn't have anything better to do. So I just read through all of those. So when was the last time I read it? Last time I read it, I read the first third of it / listened to the audiobook of the first third this past week. Phil, last time you read it?
I listened to it from Audible. Actually, not from Audible, but I listened to the audiobook this last month to prepare. Before that, it had been quite a while since I've read it, so I don't remember.
Not recently. I think the last time I read The Hobbit was the summer after my senior year, so that was like 2 years ago, I think. Maybe 2.5. Yep.
What part do you remember the best, Phil?
I remember it all pretty well right now.
Anything stick out to you in particular upon this last listening?
This last time I listened through, I was really surprised with how adult I felt a lot of it was, because I really think of it as a children's book, but there's a lot of gore and there's a lot of higher, like, higher cognitive plot things going on that, you know, I'm not necessarily thinking about in terms of a children's book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think for me, what kind of stood out a little bit reading it over again was some of, they mentioned Gondolin again as where the swords came from, and I've since read The Silmarillion once and gone back through it a little bit, so that has a lot more significance for me as to the history of that city. And I think the swords are mentioned in The Silmarillion. I'm not sure, though. They might be, because I think they were... I think they were actually the king's sword. I want to say that it was Finrod Felagund who founded Gondolin, and one of the swords was his, but I might be wrong about that. So...
Well, I haven't read it recently. I'm super excited for the riddle game, though, when Bilbo's down talking to Gollum. I'm really excited for that part to see how that plays out. I think that's just such a crucial part in the entire series that I'm excited to see that finally kind of come to light.
I listened to... There's some recordings of J.R.R. Tolkien reading selections from his books, and I haven't listened to all of them, but I listened to the Riddles in the Dark chapter, and that was really fantastic to hear him doing the voices.
Yeah, I'm super excited.
Do you have a favorite part, Phil?
Isn't that the question you just asked?
No, it's a very different question.
Wait, what was the question right before
this? The question before this was what stood out to you or what was most memorable. This has to do with...
Gotcha.
Yeah, favorites.
I probably have a couple favorite parts. I'm not blanking on them all right now. I mean, there certainly are areas, like especially towards the end, where Bilbo does some things and I'd like... They really... grab at me in terms of like emotionally. I'm like, yes, it's so cool, or like, no, don't do that. But favorite parts, I don't know, Riddles in the Dark is always a big a favorite, I guess. And then there's a couple other like little, I don't know, I'm completely blanking. What's this book about?
Phil hasn't actually read the book.
It's about The Hobbit, Phil.
Oh, the Hobbit. Sorry, I was thinking of the other guy with the short guy with the round door.
Yeah, I think they're the same.
Oh.
As far as favorite parts for me, I guess the...
I have to edit that out.
Okay. Remember to edit that out, Phil.
Marker!
I think the ending... was very unexpected for me when I first read it, so that's always been interesting for me, just how everything worked out in the end and the plot reversals there. Where they're in the Misty Mountains has always been a favorite part of mine, because when I was reading it, I definitely felt very claustrophobic and wanting to get out of these tunnels that were endless. I guess that stood out for me. So yeah.
From my limited memory, I remember really enjoying, actually, the very beginning of it when, I mean, he's not looking for this adventure or anything, and all these dwarves just start pouring into his house. And I love his reaction to that part, so.
I like how that scene is almost repeated again when they get to Bjorn's house towards the middle of the book. I didn't write this question, so I'm not sure... exactly where it's going, but what if anything scares you about the movie, Phil?
Okay, so this question is more like, is there anything that you have heard them talk about doing in the movie, or you like have this idea in your head that they're going to do something in the movie that like is going to not really ruin The Hobbit for you, but maybe ruin the movie because it's not the way you want it to be, that sort of thing. So it's like, are they going to make any changes that you're really, really nervous about because you really don't want to see those changes?
Do you have any of those, Phil?
I'm not sure. From some of the trailers, there's a few sections where I'm like, you know, I'm a little queasy. Like, why is that? Why are they have their swords drawn here? That's not supposed to happen. But at the same time, you can't adapt a book to a movie word for word. Mm-hmm. It has to be an adaptation, because books don't make good movies. I mean, they're not visual. They're internal. There's maybe a few things here or there where I'm like, I've seen some like fight scenes or some maybe a little bit of like, I guess mainly I see fight scenes that aren't supposed to be there, or maybe a little, but I think it's going to make for a good film.
Yeah. I think for me, having looked at the trailers, I'm a little bit concerned about the treatment of the Misty Mountains, because it seems extremely well lit down there and very expansive, whereas that was not the feeling I got maybe from reading the book. That concerns me a little bit.
My turn. Well, I think like Phil said, there's going to be differences between every book and movie that's made, and I guess I usually just go in assuming that it's going to be a little bit different. I am a little bit nervous because one of my friends who did go to the midnight premiere said that they did change one thing that was pretty significant, and she won't tell me what it is. So I'm kind of freaking out about that. But, right?
Yeah.
Right? No, she was like, it was really good. They changed one thing. I'm not going to tell you till after you see it. Like, so I'm really nervous about that. But maybe it was just her trying to freak me out, too. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I am concerned that it's going to be extremely long, like The Lord of the Rings.
As someone that I did talk to that went to see it last night said that it reminded them a lot of The Fellowship, but with more action. And I guess to me, The Fellowship felt like the longest of the three movies.
Really?
But, yeah.
It felt like the shortest to me.
Really?
It's the show. As someone who has watched it at least once every year for the past 12 years, it feels the shortest. Actually, I take that back. Probably The Two Towers feels the shortest, but that's mostly because I would probably run to go get pizza somewhere in the middle.
No, I definitely have always felt like The Fellowship felt longer to me. I don't know.
Yeah, The Fellowship was the only one of the Lord of the Rings films where the pacing really worked for me, I guess. Mm. The other two felt really long and seemed like they're
missing
something.
I'm not saying the other two weren't long, but
they seemed like they would. The Return of the King seemed really, really long, but I'm interested to see what from the appendices in the Return of the King comes through in the Hobbit, because I believe Jackson was not able to take any material from the Silmarillion since it's not been licensed, so anything that is going to explain more of the backstory of the Lord of the Rings has to come from the appendices and things like that. So I'm hoping that there will be a lot of more backstory regarding the Istari and Saruman, and it looks like Radagast would be in the film, and I'm hoping that more of Sauron's return to power will be explained. Because at some point, and I'm not certain of this, I believe that the wizards get together and drive him from Dol Guldur on the river Anduin, and that's why he goes back to Mordor, is he's driven from his attempt to find the ring in the river there, and I hope we get to see maybe some of that as well. But maybe that's outside the scope of this story. Do you get the sense that The Hobbit as a film will be more lighthearted than The Lord of the Rings as the book was? Or what do you think the treatment of that will be?
Well, from the trailers, there's definitely a large amount of comic relief going on. So, yeah, in some extent, I do see it being very, very lighthearted. But I think there's going to be a lot of potentially superfluous information pushed around, which, I don't know, that's more of a pacing thing than in anything else.
Yeah. I'd be interested to see if we get more of the history of the dwarves and some of their background as well. Might be appropriate. What do you guys think of the decision to make this into not two, but three films now? Is that a poor decision? Is this going to be a ridiculously long...
Do we know where they're cutting it? I haven't been following it.
The first film is cut at page 109.
Don't spoil it.
So I won't say where that is.
I don't actually remember what happens on page 109 exactly.
Well, now I might as well go. I'm done. I'm turning around.
You can sleep in the car. We'll go.
It doesn't get to the end. I'll
say
that.
Yeah, no, I get...
Oh. Spoiler alert!
Wait, there's three films?
Yeah, there's supposedly three films now. It was going to be two. They had so much footage at the end of... So they decided to extend the shooting. So they've been shooting for 18 months or something ridiculous, I was reading. So, and recording music for several months possibly as well, which is also very unheard of.
To put this in perspective, and for a lot of people who follow this sort of thing, they kind of know this, but for people who aren't familiar with this, like, when you go to film a movie, you're talking 3 to 4 months. You film a movie and you're done. When Peter Jackson goes to film a movie, he goes to film 3 movies and he works on it for like 3 or 4 years. So in the time that everyone else makes like, what, 12 movies, he's made 3.
I don't know if anyone who can make 12 movies in 4 years, but I suppose they're out there somewhere.
They didn't have to be good movies. They could be really crappy movies.
I mean, not to get sidetracked, but... when they shot Helm's Deep, just the shooting for that, those scenes alone, was the length of a normal feature film.
Hmm. That's interesting.
I know far too much about this.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure... Most films, for recording the film scores, they will spend 6 days or 12 days or 3 days, something like that, recording the entire score. But I think we learned from speaking to Doug Adams, which we'll talk more about later, that with Lord of the Rings, they were recording for months and redoing things and reworking it until they got exactly what they wanted, resulting in an enormous amount of unused material. So that's a very different approach to the recording process. But I guess if you have the money to pay all those musicians to be there for that long, it can kind of work. Is there any other comments you have regarding The Hobbit going into it, or things that you want to discuss, or are we set? All right, I think we're good. We will let you know what happens, provided we get there safely, and talk to you guys later. All right, so part two. Some of us didn't like the film so much, Will.
Some of us being Aaron.
That was the greatest thing to ever come out of anything.
I would disagree with that, but...
Best thing to come out this year? What else did come out?
This is a tough year to say that about.
Yeah.
We had the Batman trilogy ending.
Yeah, that's a tough call.
We had the Twilight Saga ending. We had Avengers. And we have Les Miserables, which is probably going to be fantastic, but it's not going to be... It's going to be terrible in the box office.
It's something at Christmas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be terrible in the box office.
We decided that.
So...
Well, it's supposed to open to the same day as the Hobbit.
So, you can have it... It can be killed by Christmas, or it can be killed by the Hobbit.
Yeah. Either way,
okay.
Well, obviously, Twilight and the Avengers don't quite
okay,
make
let's,
it for
let's
me.
Have, let's have
Not that I've seen Twilight, so maybe I shouldn't say anything.
Don't. I wanted you to recount. You were saying something when we left the theater, and I caught the last half of what you were talking about. Are you able to recount what you were saying there?
Okay, I think Stephanie said.
Oh,
something.
I just think there were certain parts that were over dramatic.
Yeah.
I mean, in the sense, like, when he's walking up the tree at the very end and the fire's around him and his hair's, like, blowing back and the, like, I just, like, honestly sat down and I was like, really?
There's gonna be a showdown
come on.
I do feel like the tree, spoiler alert, we'll throw a spoiler alert in, but I do feel like the tree over the edge of the cliff thing is way overdone right now.
Yeah.
Like, I was okay with that to the point where he was, like, walking off the slope, like, oh, I couldn't do it. It looks really cool, but...
Looks like the shot from Tintin, actually.
Does it?
Kind of.
I don't think I've seen that one yet.
I haven't.
Can I borrow it?
Yeah.
Which...
Watch it.
The problem I have... Yeah, I've seen it. The problem I have with Tintin is the same problem I have with this movie.
Which is?
Which is pacing. And
in things that they did with the story. The problem with Tintin was it was an almost never-ending action sequence. So I felt like we didn't really get to know the characters, and if you haven't read the books, you really miss out on a lot of character development for Tintin, and I feel the same way about The Hobbit. I think there was some pretty good setup at the beginning, but we definitely lose a lot of important moments throughout the middle and the end of the story because they're so busy cutting off goblins' heads that they don't have time to drop the burglar and get lost.
How much of that do you think they can afford to give up? You have, I mean, Gandalf, Bilbo Baggins, a fair amount of the characters are in the other, like, Lord of the Rings movies. Mm-hmm. So how much of that do you think is appropriate and how much of it do you think should develop further?
Are you guys warm enough?
A little bit warm.
Yeah, I'm okay. I think especially with the dwarves and Bilbo, a little bit more could have been drawn out, maybe. I mean, they get separated pretty early in the book, but they get separated even earlier in the film, and Gandalf doesn't even show up until the key moment, where there's no explanation how he even got inside the mountain and found them, whereas in the book, he just kind of followed along, and I was...
But in the book, like, that was one of my problems with the beginning of it, too, I guess, was that Gandalf just shows up quite often to save the day, quite often, be like, three times, but...
Yeah.
Like, he does that in the book.
But he was with them in the book, in the tunnels. And he put out the lights, and then it was completely dark, which I liked. And there were all these sparks that flew up and burned the goblins when he makes his appearance. And in the film, he just kind of does this explosion thing, which stuns a few of them, and then they're off running again.
Which kind of brings this full circle to the point we started with, was when the goblin king dies in that line. Again, with another... What is going on here?
I'm not sure who is reading the script to look for those types of bad moments, but they missed that one.
It was
reminded me of the Avengers when I say that.
Yeah, it was an Avengers.
Thank you.
We can call this an Avengers moment.
Yep, it definitely was an Avengers moment. But so what? How can you justify that?
Well, if you'll give me a moment to get my thoughts in order, because you,
like, the Great Goblin
messed me up, like, six times.
The Great Goblin never felt like a real threat to me.
No, not at all. He was a joke.
He was just kind of cracking jokes the whole time, and...
But, see, that was something I liked.
Are you an Avengers aficionado?
No, but the Avengers is a crowd pleaser.
I feel like...
No, here's...
But,
here's,
see, that's what I thought... That's what it sounded like they were joking around.
Okay. Here's the deal. This is how it ends. So in The Hobbit, let me come. I need to come back to this other thing about. I need to keep coming back to this thing I keep forgetting and don't get a chance to say. We'll get to that later. The thing right that's relevant to this is in the book. The goblins are, you are told that they are a very clever and very cruel race of beings. But they sing songs. Like, the whole time, they're singing this almost lighthearted, jolly song about cracking whips, and, there's a lot of onomatopoeia. It's a very big part of the book. They don't, in the movie, they're portrayed as very evil, very clever, but very dark. And so to actually see the Goblin King, who in the book was a lot more maybe grave and dark, be kind of the silly, more lighthearted character, it was almost feel like it was a role reversal between the goblins as a whole and this head figure. But at the same time, I was glad that they showed it, that yes, the goblins, did have a little bit of the song in there. They did show a little bit of this, that they showed some of the clever, I mean, they showed this clever contraption where he was flying across the thing. It showed their cruelness, and, you know, to me, it all kind of together did enough to sum up, this is what the goblin culture is.
Well,
whether or not his last line, alive... I thought it was really funny, but...
I'm not saying it was funny, I just didn't think it was appropriate.
I'm when he first knocked him off the edge, I thought he was just done for, and I was really disappointed that there wasn't a bigger battle, because in the book, I thought he cut off his head or something like that, and I'm like, well, they're probably not going to show that.
They did, but I don't think he could even barely move in the book,
yeah.
Honestly.
So, I guess, don't have as much of a problem.
I guess my problem is when one of your main villain characters is leading the rest of his troop in a song, and then cracking jokes right after that, it doesn't inspire a lot of fear or loathing. I don't know. Because I felt like in the book, these creatures come out and they're dragging the dwarves away, and we have no idea what they are, but they're singing this terrible song along with the slapping of their feet on the stones as they go down. And that, to me, is a lot scarier than... The goblins didn't scare me in this film.
They weren't terribly scary.
It's the whole alien thing where you can't see the alien.
I almost feel...
Until.
Along those same lines, the dwarves did a lot more fighting than I feel they probably should have, because there was never... while the goblins maybe weren't terribly scary,
mm-hmm.
the dwarves never felt very vulnerable to me.
Right.
Which I maybe had a little bit of concern with. But the other thing is, having read these so recently, like, I feel like there was... Like, I always knew what was going to happen, and even if it didn't happen exactly the same way, I knew enough about what was going to happen that a lot of the times I felt more like it was an inconvenience that I had to wait through another chase scene before they actually got somewhere than it was suspense on whether or not they were going to get caught.
Right. And I think there's a fair point to be made about doing things a little bit differently so you can still have that sense of surprise, being so familiar with the material. But most of the time, maybe not most of the time, but too many times I felt like the build-up to the surprise was kind of a letdown. Like, oh, you had to do it that way.
I did like the inclusion of the necromancer, because that's going to... that's going to be the reason Gandalf leaves later.
Right.
So they're actually filling in a lot of the gaps that The Hobbit did have.
And I figured that... Go ahead.
No, I was always going to say what's his name.
I mean, I knew they had to include him, and I hoped that they would. But... And I'm glad that, I guess, they didn't give away too much of his backstory at this point, which is probably good. It did seem kind of weird, though, that they... talked about the kingdom of Angband, Angmar, I should say. Angband is the fortress in the Silmarillion, but I thought it was interesting they brought that up. Because that's probably one of the more murky histories, because it happens in the Second Age, and there isn't much written about that. So I'm not sure how much they made up regarding the tomb of the Witch King. I don't remember reading about that, but then again, I'm not. And it might actually be in the appendices and/or the Book of Lost Tales, which I've not read.
I've not read those either. I have them. I think I have both of them. One and two. They're hard to read. I've tried to start Silmarillion a couple times and can't stay with
it. Skip the first book that's not really the Silmarillion and just go straight to the Quento Silmarillion, and then it's really good. I don't know.
When did we start recording? Did we talk about music with the recording?
We haven't talked about music.
We the next episode of this show, we're going to be talking with someone who is very close to the music of this show.
We already mentioned his name, unless you edited that out.
I don't know, maybe I will now.
In the future when you edit it out.
I'll edit it. But in the future when I edit it out... We won't have told you what it is. But we didn't see his name in the credits.
Yeah, I was disappointed. I feel bad for him.
We need to get some good recognition. And I thought the music was well done. I wish there would have been I felt like when you read The Lord of the Rings, it's very easy to skip over the long, long songs.
Mm-hmm.
At least I have.
Yeah.
Find it very easy to skip those. but I do feel like those songs being a audible component should have been, could have been bigger.
I think they add a lot to the film because that's not something you see in a lot of major motion pictures now, like, especially ones that aren't musicals.
Yeah.
Like, you don't ever really see the characters singing. I don't know. I
wish they would, the dwarf song, I wish
so
they would have done all 10, 12 verses or however many Tolkien wrote.
It's a real lore, I would say.
Oh, yeah. There it is. Yeah, they did. They didn't do the elf song when they're getting up to Rivendell, which would put a whole different spin on the elves because it's so ridiculous.
I was kind of wondering about that, and I was kind of hoping they would do something like that, but because
which I'd forgotten how silly it was until I listened to the book.
Well, the movies portray the elves as being a very solemn people, and the elves are not a solemn people. I mean, they have their, they know respect.
Yeah.
They have their solemn moments, but they're very jolly.
Yeah, it kind of depends on which ones.
But within the realm of the show or the movies, like, there's never been a big opportunity to show their jolliness without. And to show their jolliness by doing a ridiculous song is going to make them seem silly. And so I
feel like this was their moment to do it, though.
It would have been, yes. How do you guys feel about starting off with past, present Bilbo talking about past Bilbo? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Maybe a little superfluous?
Okay.
Maybe we didn't need that?
I think they could have easily started. I feel the only reason they did that was so they could have Elijah Wood in the film.
I agree.
Was it worth it for you to have Elijah Wood then?
No.
Okay. It was worth it. I guess I like the little tie-in to the party at the beginning.
Yeah, I mean,
that kind of worked for me.
It was very clever. I feel there was a point at the beginning right when they were talking about, when it's like, you don't want to be late. It's like they dropped like three right in a row references to the dialogue from the Fellowship. And I'm like, okay, guys, we get it. We get it. You made a reference to being late.
It looks really
and
odd.
Then he goes and makes a reference. And it's like,
I thought the match cut was interesting between the old self and the younger self on the same bench.
I was hoping, like, I was waiting for that. Like, I was waiting for them. There were about three or four spots where I was expecting them to just do a dissolve into, or a cut, or something, and then it would be back in the old day.
Were you happy with where they finally did it then?
No, I was glad it finally happened. I was afraid it was going to be Princess Bride style, where every 10 minutes he's like, and then what happened?
No. Tell me again, Bilbo.
or is like, and then I fell off the cliff. Wait, no, that didn't happen.
And then the end of the movie can be, wait, I have to get the tea.
Yeah. It's gonna, you know that's how it's gonna end. It's gonna end back with him finishing writing that book and going off to the party.
Maybe.
Just calling that right now.
Maybe.
You can, June of 2014. Marker!
Talk about the thing you were going to talk about before, but then you forgot and now you remembered again.
I think it's time for that thing.
I think I already did.
What?
Okay, you slipped it in there somewhere?
Yeah.
I missed it.
Come
again?
I was talking about having recently read the book and how that like nothing was really a surprise. I was just kind of, which I don't know, I felt like through that almost the entire movie where I was just kind of waiting for stuff to happen. But I feel where they cut it was the area I expected it to be cut. Like, if you would have told me, break the Hobbit up into three parts, I would have been like, okay, get him to the Eagles. Kill off Smaug. Get him home. You know, and that's kind of, from the titles, that's kind of what I expect them to do. But that's where I would have been.
Where do you think the second one will cut off? I'm kind of thinking before they go into the mountain, maybe?
The if I'm correct, the title of the second one is The Desolation of Smaug.
Okay.
And so it will end with Smaug's death.
I don't Do you think he'll end with his death, or will it end with... there has to be some sense of finality, I guess.
It's possible they won't come off to the last one, but I feel between...
How do they make the third movie about the battle, then?
The battle, and then maybe some other... I don't know. But, so, they're at least...
Maybe...
They have to get to the mountain, and I feel like Smaug has to do something before.
Yeah.
It ends. They can't leave Smaug only to the last one.
Which, the last shot of this film, I really enjoyed. I thought that was the way to end it.
Yes.
You did, but that's okay.
There was something else about... I like the eyeball. There's a lot of eyes.
Ooh, how about the 3D?
I thought the stereo was restrained, which was good.
There were a couple spots where I was flinching because arrows were coming through me.
What?
But did you guys not see that?
There were a few shots where a horde of people were jumping into the camera that made me jump a little bit.
There, like, for the first little bit, it was, like, the first third was getting... I do feel like about an hour... I wasn't looking at my watch, so I think about an hour to hour and a half... I think hour and a half in, I felt like the movie could be ending... And then, because there was a slow segment, and then it kind of picked back up again. I knew they couldn't end it that soon, but because the trailers had already shown stuff past that.
Right.
But in terms of the 3D at the beginning, I felt like the first, until they left the Hobbit hole, it was all getting used to the 3D.
Yeah.
And then after they left, I felt like it was really well done because I could forget about it.
Yeah.
Until they got to the goblins. And a little bit on the mountain as well, because suddenly there's rocks hurling at the screen, there's arrows being shot at the screen, and I don't know if they let them go through the screen or if they cut the shot to a different shot right before then, and then there was some other stuff coming at the screen, and I don't know if it's because where I was sitting or what, but I felt like a lot of it was coming straight towards me because I was down in the corner of the screen. Did you guys feel like you were too close? Like, I felt like I had to look...
I wouldn't want to be any closer because I would have to look back and forth a little bit.
I was looking back and forth a lot.
Not a lot.
Yeah.
And at the beginning, it was very, very, took me a little bit to get used to because I was looking back and forth, which is one reason I did like the depth of field being so large. When I watched Avatar in 3D, there was a very shallow depth of field. So if you didn't want to focus on what the camera was focusing on, you're like, I can't see anything. It's all blurry. But with this, a lot of it was always in focus. So you didn't always have to look at whatever the camera was focusing on. And there was so much to see. The first 30 seconds, there's so much going on. I could watch it four times.
Yeah, I did feel that the cutting was pretty quick.
It was snappy.
I didn't have time to look at everything that was going on. It probably was good that there was more depth of field. It didn't feel as cinematic just because of that difference in the look, but I think that's more of a cultural thing that will change potentially. It felt very real and very present a lot of the time.
But extremely sharp. I think the 4K, I really like being able to see that detail. When we watched The Dark Knight on a similar size screen, it bugged me for the first hour of that movie that it was blurry.
Yeah.
I saw
The Avengers as a film print, and I definitely saw the grain, and I saw the scratches in it, and just the softness of it. You definitely feel very different watching film versus 4K versus traditional 2K projection. I guess the brightness was okay, but I think a lot of screens still suffer from not being bright enough to overcome the glasses. Like, I didn't feel like it was bad for this film. And I kind of wish that the scenes were not as lit up as they were. It seemed like everything was very evenly lit to me. Like, there wasn't enough use of shadow. But...
Yeah, even when they were, like, down in the obscurity,
it was fairly... Yeah. There's work lights, and you can see everything.
Did you guys get dizzy at all?
No.
There were two, maybe three points where the camera moving, I could see out of the peripheral vision of mine, told me that the theater was also spinning. And it was only very short. It wasn't like a complete dizzy, but it's like, whoa. I think I said that one time. I don't know if you heard me, but I was
Was that the straight down shot of the...
Yeah. And a lot of the straight down shots where they spun and whatever, it's like suddenly I'm like, whoa, what's going on?
Yeah, we mentioned this a little bit before we started recording, but there was some maybe distortion or stretching if the camera was rotating too quickly.
Which may have come from the 3D parallax, like, because the focal node or the focal point is outside the camera.
Right.
And it could have come from the lenses they were using, and it could have come from the fact that the screen is slightly curved because it's so huge.
I don't know if it's a mistake necessarily, but I think it's one of those things you just can't get rid of, perhaps, with...
No, not in those confined spaces. Once you're outdoors and you have a bigger sense, I think it's fine.
But, like, I noticed it even in some of the environments where you see the mountains a little bit. I did really like the landscape shots again. I felt like we could have watched those for another 5 minutes.
You can get a copy of Planet Earth.
We need to.
Or whatever we
want
to watch
this
summer.
I need to visit New Zealand or something now.
Yes. Can we go, please?
Right now?
Yes.
Our airport's that way.
I'm ready.
We're not editing this.
Okay, I won't edit it. It's your show.
This is really important analysis, Phil.
Yeah, coming from the person who wanted no fluff.
This is my one indulgence to fluff.
Okay.
All right.
That's also the show title.
Guess we have to start another podcast, Phil.
The one indulgence of fluff. Indulgence of fluff. Oh, yikes.
Aaron, were there any other reasons you did not look as favorably on the film?
Besides leaving out some important moments
Tom
and shuffling,
I know.
Tom Bombadil wasn't in the book, Phil.
No.
That's the fellowship, and I don't have any problem with them leaving him out of this. I'm not a fan.
Hey, you didn't like Tom Bombadil?
No, I didn't really care for him.
Out of my car! Go ahead, I interrupted you. I apologize.
I'm glad they put the stone giants in there. A little bit overdone again.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, if they had just shown the stone giants fighting kind of in the distance and there was a little bit of danger...
And they wouldn't have been, like, on top of them?
It wasn't like they were riding the stone giants.
Yeah.
Like, I get the sense that technology has allowed us to do a lot of things, and that's great, but that doesn't mean we have to do them all.
Okay. For the record... When Fellowship of the Ring came out, I had read the book, like, the week before.
Mm-hmm.
And the first time I watched it, I was looking for every little thing they did different.
Mm-hmm.
And the second time I watched it, I noticed a bunch of other things that they did differently.
Mm-hmm.
The third time I saw it in theaters, I started to kind of more enjoy it as a movie. And the fourth time I saw it in theaters, which was the last time I saw it in theaters, I really enjoyed it. I did this for the Lord of the Two Towers... The first time I saw it in theaters, I had just read the book, and so I was critiquing it. I think I saw that one only twice, maybe three times in theaters. By the time I got to Return of the King, I had started to read the book, but I don't think I ever finished it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was pretty much okay with that being the case. And so going into this, like, this is same old, same old. I knew they were going to do a bunch of stuff differently.
Right.
I was a little worried about stuff here and there, but I knew the people who were making it really cared about it.
Yeah.
And I was willing to...
No, I don't disagree.
...to accept whatever choices they made. And I had a great time.
So we need to turn around and go back to the 10 o'clock showing, because that's a very valid point. I like, I've definitely done that, too, where you watch it the first time and you critique everything that's different, and then the second time you watch it, you're like, oh, I can really enjoy this and appreciate this as a film.
Right. And I don't have a problem...
Adaption.
I don't have a problem with different.
It really sounds like you do.
I have a problem with different when different is worse than... The original.
But how do you define worse? And see, that's the thing that's the hardest to get your head around. And I'm not saying I'm good at this, but to fully understand the differences between the book and a movie, like, there's a lot of stuff I wish they would have done differently in this movie and done more like the book. But at the same time, I know that. If I were to, like, bend Peter Jackson here, I would have probably made a really boring movie. Like, I would have made a movie where people would have walked out after 15 minutes because I'm still, like, describing the inside of the house.
I'm well, still with Aaron, though, a little bit in the sense that I do feel like, I don't want to bring up the Avengers again, but I do feel like it was adapted a lot differently. Like,
yeah.
To fit the current, like, expectation.
Like, The Lord of the Rings had a lot of action in it, but it was more motivated,
exactly.
With the exception of the Two Towers and the Return of the King, which
two-thirds of
it. Yeah, I have a big problem.
Fellowship, the exception.
I have a big problem with those two films as well. Specifically, the extra fight in the middle of the Two Towers with the wargs, and I had a huge problem with the wargs in this film too. I didn't really like them.
I don't think you're supposed to ever like wargs.
But they were enormous.
Yeah.
They're more like bears than
but
wargs.
But they are supposed to be large, quite large.
Not that large.
You were supposed to be able to ride them.
Like, in the Silmarillion, there's a giant wolf that's supposed to be that large. And these ones were not that wolf. And they shouldn't have been that large. But anyway, they brought in the goblins way too early, which also harmed their scare factor for me.
I could have done without the extra
villain. See, we agreed on this. This was a change that was definitely detrimental.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly think they could have done without it. I don't know, like, I'm not sure I'm willing to say it was detrimental, because I think that it could be potentially be used, like, if it's used appropriately, it could be helpful to help push the plot along.
I'm pretty sure he's supposed to be dead before this.
Like I said,
no,
I'm okay with some
point.
That's irrelevant. Mm-hmm. Like, whether or not this character is really supposed to be dead, he's clearly not in this version of the universe, in this version,
like,
of the Tolkien universe.
A major difference.
I feel like the reason they put him in was an
extra. It's a major difference for a minor character.
But they made him such a major character in the film, and they made him such a huge motivation for Thorin,
which was
completely unnecessary.
Okay, here's. I'm not saying that this is. I'm going to give you a false dichotomy. And I'm going to call it a false dichotomy right here. But, okay, so you have this. I'm assuming that this character, because I don't know the history that well, I'm assuming that this white orc actually did fight with Thorin.
This is true.
And he did kill him.
I believe so.
We need this other person to help move the plot along. You can argue that point later. But who do we want? Do we want somebody who actually existed, who actually has a past with Thorin, and who, like, crawled away off to die and wasn't necessarily killed? Do we pull in somebody else who had no association with Thorin, or do we make someone up? I would give you that for your options. Which would you prefer, one of the other two, as to opposed to what they did?
Given those severe options, I'm okay with it. If those were
go.
The only options,
those will go. That's what comes to mind in terms of options. Because I'm not necessarily saying
I very much enjoyed the fact that they showed the battle at Moria, because that's an important story point, and I'm glad they put that in there. I'm also glad they put the battle in at the beginning of the film with Smaug. And I also really like that they didn't reveal Smaug yet. Like, that's what they should have done more throughout the film, is they should have hinted at more things rather than showing us them completely.
But do you really think that's going to help them in the sense that you've read the book very recently, but how much of the audience has actually read The Hobbit? Like, I'm not saying that they should base it off of...
This is true.
...who their audience is going to be, but if they're...
Well, you have
to. Well, yeah. I mean, I know, but in the sense that... How many audience members that they're looking to target have actually read the book and are going to understand it if you're just hinting at 60% of what's actually going on?
Mm-hmm. Which is why it should have been two films instead of three, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, they certainly could cut it down to two films.
Yeah. My problem with making it three films is when you make it three films just so you don't have to cut all the extra fluff you threw in there, but you actually kind of think you like.
Yeah.
Which is what I feel like what happened with Peter Jackson.
And from what I've heard is there's a 20 minutes of extra footage being added to the director's cut of this film. Mm. So it'll be 3 hours, 10 minutes.
Just 1 minute.
Yeah,
see,
I know, right?
I've never watched the extended editions of the films. And from what I heard, like the way they killed Saruman off at the end of The Return of the King, I was really disappointed with what they did. I haven't seen it, but I was like, that's really ridiculous.
Considering they didn't... Considering what they didn't do at the end of Return of the King, and I would be willing to accept various arguments on why they really shouldn't have as well, mm-hmm. mainly just because we didn't want a 4 movies. you need to come and watch that, man. You need to come on the 29th. You need to watch it. Are you in town?
Possibly. I don't know if I could watch 12 hours or whatever.
It's 11. They won't let me watch the credits anymore.
You'd rather be there.
Hey, if I'm the only one there, I'm watching the credits.
I'll maybe think about it.
Think about it? I don't know. I don't think anyone's coming. It's gonna be me, my brother, and maybe one or two other people who've potentially said they weren't. But like,
doesn't sound like nobody.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like no one's coming.
Well, it,
no one's coming. Like, there's gonna be like 10 of us.
I wish I knew 10 people. It's gonna be me and my brother. I haven't heard back from anyone if they're planning on coming or not. I know of a couple people who will be in town, but I don't know of anyone who's potentially.
I'm kind of surprised because I think you messaged like 30 people.
Mm-hmm. Most of them don't. The 29th, you're probably not around. I can text you the when we change discs if you want to follow along at home.
I appreciate that. I don't actually own the extended editions.
My brother has the extended editions now. That I have not watched.
I could text you and you could follow along at home. It wouldn't be nearly as fun.
Then you get done sooner.
You could, yeah, you could, well, no, not, no, you just have a little bit of break in
I
between.
Could watch bonus material.
You could watch. The thing is, when people come, well, I don't think we're, I think we're done recording. When people come, okay. So I'm, like, in the morning, I will probably be watching something.
Can we do our outro then?
If you want to.
Okay.
People's, like, I usually start at 9 a.m. And I'll usually have, like, some, I don't know, sometimes I'll, like, watch a little bit of something beforehand. We start the movie at 9. Like, I think I watched Scott Pilgrim beforehand, like, last year.
What?
But, so, or at least had it, I had it up
like,
and running.
What type of, like, rep is that for Lord
of the Rings? So, sometimes I put in the music of the Lord of the Rings Symphony DVD. And so,
like,
so, I do.
Like Lord
I make,
of the Rings themed?
Oh, Lembas bread? The, I'm sliding here.
Nope.
I need to get over
it. If we don't make it,
it's
recording? Because we're sliding.
The, Aaron, you can't be identified anymore because you're not wearing headphones.
So, but so we'll watch all 3 films, the extended editions in a row, and we'll get it seriously is 11 hours. It gets a little bit shorter. I'm getting too old for this.
It's going to be a 20 hour.
And then when people leave, like, they leave, and it's like 9 o'clock at night. And so I'm like, now what am I going to do for the rest of the day? So one year I watched... Oh, there's a lot of time left.
3 hours.
At least 3 hours. So I watched Charlie and the Chocolate Factory the one year. And then most years, they just go through bonus footage. And it's usually bonus footage I've already seen, but it's been a year since I watched
like
it.
Zombie vibe. I'm done watching 12 hours.
I am, but I'm not ready to go to sleep. I need to just sit and do something.
Do something productive.
Like what? I just wasted... Like, I don't have any energy to do anything
productive. How about you do this? How about you read all of the books in order, and then you watch all of the films?
I have all the audiobooks now. I can actually listen to them. I don't
know.
Not as long as you would think. They're like 10 hours a piece.
That's too long.
I should reread them.
Okay.
Yeah.
This has been the 3rd episode of The Circle. All in all, Phil liked the film?
Yeah.
Stephanie?
Can I give it 1 thumbs up, 1 thumbs down? Like, I'm undecided. I think
sure.
I'll see it again.
Yeah, I think same for me. It was fun. Maybe not.
See, I went in
the best
knowing,
thing ever.
I went in knowing that there were things I didn't want to like, and I wanted to have a good time.
No, I enjoyed the experience. I don't know how I feel about the film yet.
It's a good experience. Maybe not a great film, but...
I mean, but it wasn't
not to
a bad
sound,
film, but
not
anyways,
sound, no.
You sound really negative.
Yeah, I sound way too negative. I enjoyed
that's
it.
That's not true. Like,
I enjoyed it probably more than most of the films I saw this year.
I agree. I would agree with that.
All right. Check out the podcast in 2 weeks for another look at some of the Tolkien universe.
Woo!